Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and for this episode, we are going to be talking about Comic-Con. It's that time of year again, March 20th to the 22nd. Toronto is having their Comic-Con at the Metro Toronto Convention Center, and who better to talk to than the organizer himself, or the organizer on the comics end of the show, and that's good friend of the show, Kevin Boyd. And of course, with all the fun stuff that we talk about, comic book related to the convention this year, we also talk about some of the things to be concerned about with this global pandemic that has, you know, become official with the coronavirus. A lot of things being discouraged as far as meeting together in big social environments. So there's some things that we do get into in regards to those concerns and the precautions that attendees need to take and some of the measures that are being put in place. But the show, we have a really good time talking about movies that we're looking forward to, comics that we're reading, guests that are going to be having panels hosted at the show. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. Amongst all the crazy stuff that's going on out there, it's good sometimes to sit back and remember there's a lot of things for us to still enjoy as members of fandom. So remember to leave us a review on whatever your podcast platform is. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Facebook. Every follow is appreciated. And without further ado, here's my episode with Kevin Boyd talking about this year's Toronto Comic Con. So we're glad to welcome back to the Cave of Solitude one of our close friends of the show, the comic curator for all of North America when it comes to Fan Expo, Comic Cons, the one and only Kevin Boyd. Kevin, welcome back to the show, and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you for having me back.
Happy to talk to you. Yeah, it's always a good time talking to each other. Right now, it must be pretty hectic for you. What's the week been like with all of the craziness that's going on in the world right now?
Well, I mean, we're in the midst of putting on 4 shows in North America in the next 2 months. So obviously, we have a lot of work to do on those. Still, we're doing all the final touches and all the things we would normally be doing as far as seeing and programming and travel and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting time in North America right at the moment with everything that's going on around the world.
Have you ever had to, like, you've never dealt with something like this before. I know the answer to that, but what are some of the things when you're planning a con, like normal hiccups that you've got to deal with that now you're becoming even more of a, I guess, an expert in management of issues with this particular virus right now? Like, what are the stuff you usually have to, that are headaches?
Well, I mean, with any show, things happen, right? So right. You book guests, you make arrangements, things happen. I mean, everybody has their own life. So, You know, they have family members who get sick or they get ill or people have accidents, people may get divorced in the middle of a convention, or, you know, all sorts of things can happen.
Right.
Babies are due, or parents may pass away, or all sorts of stuff. So there's that logistical aspect of trying to keep all of your talent in line and organized as far as what they need and whether they can make it or not. So definitely with something like this, there are challenges. I mean, I can't get into too much detail about stuff, but obviously, you know, people are concerned, right? So you've got to try to talk to them and see what's going on, and you can't really advise them. It's their decision ultimately.
Right. So as we speak now, which is a week away or so from the Toronto Comic Con of March 20th to 22nd, the show is still a go.
Yes.
Okay. And has there been, I mean, whatever it is that you can tell us, I know that there's a limit to what you can share, but has there been people who have expressed their, you know, I'm no longer coming, or are you guys still doing this thing? Do you know what I mean? Is there that hesitation from people?
I think everybody's nervous, And people don't, like, they're looking for leadership and they're looking for government action. They're looking for information on what to do. And obviously I mean, I work in healthcare. That's my main job. Is I during right. the day I work in healthcare, so we're concerned. We're getting updates on what's going to happen to hospitals and clinics and things like that. So we're looking for that leadership as well. What is this disease, and how can we prevent it from spreading? How can we protect ourselves? And so, obviously, we're really pushing for people who do come to the convention to listen to those. To that instruction of washing your hands and face, taking care of yourself, make sure you drink your fluids, you know, try not to compromise your immune system in any way. And that's true of anything you do at any point during the day and anywhere, basically, with something like this going around, is you don't want the flu. So take the same steps you would take to prevent yourself from getting the flu, mm-hmm. which is look after yourself, you know. Really avoid junk food and bad practices and you know any steps you can take to make yourself you know protected in a sense, right?
Right. What are there any measures put in place, I guess, for the show? Because, you know, everyone's saying at this point, don't go places, big meeting places. If you can work from home. And, you know, Ontario yeah. isn't as bad as other places in the world right now. But are there any measures put in place for the con?
Well, right now they're assessing our impact in the region is very low in Toronto.
Okay.
So we're not in the, like we haven't declared a state of emergency and there isn't anything like that going on at the moment. So we're just beefing up on cleanliness and sterilization. So we're obviously beefing up on the cleaning crews that work the show. So the bathrooms will be cleaned on rotation. So there'll always be someone cleaning parts of the bathroom throughout the weekend.
Right.
We're also increasing dramatically the number of hand sanitizing stations. So they'll be all over the convention center in the main part as well, but they'll also be in the hall, is my understanding. So, and from what I understand, I think the Ontario Ministry of Health has a booth at the show where they'll have information about the virus and things you can do to protect yourselves. Man. You know, so, and they'll have sanitizing stations and how to sterilize something at home and how to properly wash your hands and signs to look out for, like all sorts of stuff to just try and spread knowledge.
Right, right, right.
And the good thing, Toronto Comic Con too is like a mid-level con as well, so it's not like a huge, it's not like Fan Expo Canada where you have like over 100,000 people. Toronto Comic Con is much more reasonable.
Okay.
Like somewhere in the 25,000 to 30,000 range, I think. So, and we don't know. Obviously, don't know what's going to happen. But I think there are lots of things people can do, and we'll be recommending that they do to protect themselves.
Yeah, who would have ever thought that one of the booths at a Comic-Con would be something to warn us about viruses? What a panel yeah. that'll be.
well, you know, it's funny. Someone was saying, as fans of genre and fiction, like science fiction and horror and stuff like that, we're all pretty familiar with the concept of viruses and
yeah.
spread and stuff like that, and dystopian futures where people are not talking to one another. And
it's true, right?
Of things, yeah. So we can just be cautious, like, and practice some of that self-knowledge that to be wary about things, right? So, and we're advising people, if you're sick, don't come in. Like, stay home. Take care of yourself. Yeah. You are you're the first priority here, so.
Yeah. What are, like, I don't know if you can give us this information, but what happens when people who are being flown in from, you know, abroad, guests to the show that are your big ticket item guests, I guess you could say. What happens in situations like that, or even other shows that are happening, not just Toronto, but throughout the United States? Are those things already coming into effect of things you have to deal with?
Well, I mean, I think I've been obviously getting airline updates from various carriers saying things that they're doing to protect their clients. Like something from Air Canada today was talking about all the different stations. They've obviously increased their hand washing stations and cleanliness areas and things like that to and they're obviously cleaning their planes dramatically too, right? They're between every flight, they're coming in and scrubbing everything down,
right?
Because they don't want to be perceived as being carriers, right? So carriers of disease. So it's in their best interest to take precautions. There's been a lot of talk too about planes and filtration. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, even though we all have this perception that we get it from the air on the planes, but they use some pretty high-tech filters on planes that, from what I understand, prevent disease. It's the armrests and things like that we touch that are more likely to have viruses.
Yeah.
Which is why they have to wipe them down with sterile, antibacterial cloths and things like that, so...
Yeah. And since you know, when stuff like this is happening in the world, because I guess everyone can agree in the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a lot of things to be downers about, but these conventions are those, you know, little bastions of hope that we have where we can put those things aside, not worry about them, and enjoy stuff. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think that there's still an opportunity for us to enjoy ourselves.
Right.
Because, you know, this, I would say that the way things are going, you never know what's going to happen, right? So you might as well enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah.
Right? So go have some fun, get some stuff, because there may be less opportunities for us to have events. I mean, I think we'll still... going to have events, obviously. It's part of the future. It's just this spring in particular, I think it's going to be challenging.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you're hearing now more realistic talk, because we've been getting so much misinformation on stuff where it's like panic, and then people who just, oh, it's nothing, more people die of the flu kind of comments.
Yeah, nothing like that really helps very often. I think that there's a fine line. Mm-hmm. I think that it's in our best interest to not shrug it off like it's nothing.
Right.
That we should be taking all of the precautions we can personally take, like washing your hands and drinking lots of water and you know, just taking care of yourself in general. But to say, oh, yeah, it's nothing, it's just like a bad flu and stuff like that. It's got, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not... I do work with epidemiologists, but I'm not an epidemiologist, so I can't speak to it. I can only say that what I see is that it's a little bit more than just the flu.
Right. It needs to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, okay, let's move on and talk about some, you know...
Let's talk about some fun stuff.
More fun stuff, yeah. So, when it comes to... organizing your shows, and I know I can't imagine how difficult it can be sometimes for you, in the sense of you are the person that everybody turns to, I guess, when they're happy and also with all of their problems. So what I'm getting at is everyone's always going to say you should have done this, you should have done that with the show. How do you go about organizing shows in this day and age where it's no longer going to be maybe in the early 2000s where having guests and legends and bringing people that were the hot topic through the, you know, to attract fans. Now we're worrying about making sure that everybody's represented, and we've got a well balanced show to properly represent comics. How do you navigate all of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I can only speak to comics because...
Right, right. I mean there, in the comics world,
there's,
specifically.
There's obviously a big team that works on all the different aspects of the shows.
Yes.
But yeah, certainly it's challenging, and certainly there's been some people online who are very critical about decisions that are being made, and things are not the way that they want them to be. So that is a tough situation for me and can be frustrating. I certainly can see that. But, you know, I do what I can. I work with who I can get and who's interested in being there. And sometimes your first choice is not always available.
Right, right.
So you also have to worry about who's coming to the show and who's spending money and who's, you know, there's been I want to be very cautious because I'm very supportive of diversity and I want as many people to love comics and be part of our our community as possible.
100%.
And downplay any of the bad history or things that we've had in the past. Comics are, in my mind, are for everybody. It's an open medium, and it can be anything to anyone.
Yes.
And so while we may focus a lot on superhero comics, there are a lot of great comics that aren't superheroes, like crime and science fiction. And comic books are a format, not a genre.
Right. 100%.
And so, but we also have to look at who's selling books and who people want to meet. And so, yeah, it is trying to come up with a fine line between legends. Obviously, you want to bring people who are heroes of the medium, who have a history and have sold a lot of comics in the past and graphic novels. And you also want to look at who's currently working in comics right now and who's working on the popular books that mm-hmm. people are buying, or who's a popular cover artist that people want to meet and get autographs from.
There's so many aspects to try to balance, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a definitely a concern when I'm planning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it's like, I can certainly say like people want a much better gender balance, and that's a tough one too, right? Because we're dealing with an industry that was 90% male for a long time.
Right.
And so a lot of your veteran creators and a lot of the people that want to be at the shows, who are pushing to be at the events, are people that have been working in this room for 20, 30 years, and this is their outlet. This is their job now, right? They're not necessarily working on the latest X-Men any longer.
Right.
But the fans still want to meet them.
For sure, yeah, totally.
Yeah. So that's an ongoing issue. So when someone says to me, your guest list is mostly male, and I'm like, yeah, but I am trying to get more female guests. It's not like I'm denying them. I'm being very, I don't want to sound like I'm being defensive. We can all matter.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I was thinking about it today, and I'm like, I can't imagine, it's not an enviable position at all, because one, you're a fan yourself. You know what people want to see, and you also want to have people represented there because you're a fan of the genre. And like you said, having also been a comic shop owner that was very much a place of community, you know more than anybody what the community is like. But if Wonder Woman is coming out this summer, and you know you have to choose between George Perez, Phil Jimenez, and Gail Simone, you know, which one do you get if you can only get one? You'd love to get all three, but which one do you get? You get the one that's going to say yes, right?
Yeah. I mean, two out of three will probably not be available.
Right. So
you do go with whoever you can get at the time.
Yeah, and if one of those people don't come, it isn't a matter of, oh, your ages, because George Perez, or you didn't want a woman, or you didn't want Phil Jimenez. Like, it's not always that thing.
No, exactly. You're so from my point of view, I'm looking for a high, like, I would be looking for a high-profile Wonder Woman creator of it doesn't matter who, as long as they're one of maybe 10 people that have done Wonder Woman runs of significance.
Right.
Right? So, you know, that would be an example. Or I'm always, you can't downplay the selling power of, say, Batman or Spider-Man. Those characters are perennial sellers, and they lead the sales charts. So you're looking at who's doing them now and who are the people that have done significant runs on those titles.
Right.
That people want to meet. So, it's sad that you have to kind of consider, you have to say, oh, I can't bring in Mark Bagley because I don't, he's another one of 50 guys that are coming to the show. So don't invite Mark Bagley. That's a tough one. I mean, and that's just a name and example.
Sure.
But it's a tough decision. It's a tough spot to be in. I just try to be, you know, like generally I'll have X number of spots that I can fill that we're willing to pay for, and I'm also working for a company, and the company has demands and things that they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they have a mandate of who I can spend money on and who the convention wants. And while I recommend people, they may not always take those people, right? They may not always be able to, they might not see the value of the spending.
Yeah.
So that's a tough one too. So, but as far as space goes, I have more control. I have, you know, let's say there's, for an example, let's say there are 100 tables and we're bringing in 40 people. That means there are 60 tables that I can fill with local creators, with people and people who want to just be at the show. So that gives me more room to say, okay, I want to reach out to people in the community that I know will be better representation mm-hmm. of our community. And I do think that Toronto is a very diverse city, so we get a lot of, like, I don't necessarily have to spend work trying to look at ethnic backgrounds.
Right, it is what it is. Everyone, because it's such a mix.
It is a melting pot. There's literally, there may be 30 or 40 different cultures represented in 60 tables.
Right.
So, which is fantastic, which is one of the things where I love about Toronto is that we're really there's a variety here of people and their backgrounds, so, and their experiences. So, that's a long-winded description of some of the challenges we face on that end. But yeah, it is, and it's going to be more of a challenge too, because, younger people are looking for that message. They're looking for that message that we're trying to be as inclusive as possible.
Yeah. And I think with the way the direction things are going, I think we will see things go in the right direction, just naturally. But not to say to force it, but in the reality of things, you know, a lot of people who are going to these shows are still fans of, let's say, the X-Men in the 80s. So there will be a ton of right. people who will come to the show to see John Romita Jr. as much as there are going to be people who want to see, Kelly Sue DeConnick, for instance, or Vida Ayala. Yeah. Like it's there's that balance. But again, the availability and whatever is happening in sure. pop culture is what you got to deal with.
Any convention would be silly not to have try to get Raina Telgemeier.
Exactly.
As an example. Yeah, she is probably the best-selling graphic novelist on the planet.
Exactly.
Right now. But she's very selective about what shows she'll do. And so, we try, and sometimes she's willing, other times she's not.
Yeah.
So, we're lucky. When I was back with Paradise in 2004 or 5, I think we had her on a show. But that was sort of before she became massive with Babysitter's Club and then all of her individual graphic novels like Sisters and Smile and Drama and stuff like that. So anyway, you have to look at any convention really needs to look at who's selling books
and ultimately,
then yeah. look to that as to who is a good guest to draw people in.
Right.
So, unless, of course, you're an oldies convention, in which case it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, as long as you have an inker that worked in Iron Man 40 years ago, then it's all good.
Right.
So,
how do you go about planning the show for the March show as opposed to the summer show? Is there any difference in appeal of people who are willing to come? Because obviously Fan Expo is huge. But what are right. some of the things that you try to do for both shows? Is there any different method to the madness?
Well, there is a bit. I mean, obviously, with Fan Expo Canada, we're looking for the biggest creators in the industry. We're looking for the people working on the top books or the people that have the biggest followings. And we're obviously listening to the fans and seeing who they'd like us to bring. And, Jim Lee is an example of someone that we do bring back on a regular basis when he's available because he has a huge following. He's huge at DC. He's very involved with new comics. And fans want to see him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't have him every year, but he comes every second year, it seems. But, we'll look at people like that. We're looking for, like, Frank Millers and we're looking for, like, Greg Capullos and Scott Snyders and Tom Kings and, you know, other people who are working in the industry. We're looking at up-and-coming people who are gathering followers. We got some interesting people lined up already for next year, for this year, I should say, for August. But
nice.
We won't be announcing them till May, I believe. So,
so we got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah.
I like
and
it.
And then Toronto Comic Con, obviously, we're looking for. I'm not looking for that same group of big name creators. I'm looking for good creators with industry history that people want to see and have been asking for. So, like, I'm very happy with this year's list with people like Kyle Baker, Mark Teixeira, who have been trying to get here for a while now. You know, with Ron Randall is coming up, and Michael Golden for the we haven't had Michael Golden back in a few years. So you know, a lot of interesting people there, and then like someone like David Nakayama, who I believe is going to be a big deal, and is growing followers and has done fantastic cover work for Marvel. And Al Ewing, of course, is a huge guest for us this year with Incredible Hulk, Guardians of the or Immortal Hulk, I should say, Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's obviously writing the big Marvel spring crossover Empire,
right?
And he's also, you know, massive history in the industry anyway, working for 2000 AD and a lot of British comics. So he's, you know, we're looking for that fine line, of course. And then, of course, we have one big superstar coming with Chris Pachalo.
Yeah, that's, I mean, Al Ewing and Chris Pachalo are huge.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Al Ewing is what, the Hulk is still outselling Batman? I don't know the numbers, but every time I look, people are singing the praises of the Immortal Hulk. So that's
yeah, it's one of my favorite books of my every month. It's first on the pile to read when it's out.
Yeah, so that's a huge get for the spring con. Mm-hmm. Has he been here before, Al Ewing?
No, he's never been here.
Oh, that's cool. That's going to be really cool.
And this spring show worked out as far as the schedule goes. So he's not always available. He couldn't come in August, so I'm glad he was able to come in March.
Yeah, no, looking at the list right now, just going over it, it is a very nice, diverse list of both people who have had books in the last 20 years that have been huge, you know, like a Rags Morales when you think of all the people that were reading Identity Crisis and Superman, yep, and Hawkman. He'll be there, like you said, Michael Golden. But then even someone like Mark Russell, who is really putting together thought-provoking books in the most, yep, you know, unlikely places with something like Flintstones. So, yeah, it's a really cool list. What,
yeah,
is the schedule up yet for the type of panels that we'll be able to attend?
Yes, the schedule's live as far as I know.
Okay.
I think there may be a little bit of tweaking, but a lot of things going on this year at Toronto Comic Con as far as programming goes, so we don't have as many comic panels as I normally would have.
Okay.
Because we had to share the room with other things. Like, there's a huge live D&D session that's going on Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah, so that starts at basically at like 11 or 12, and that runs to about 4 p.m.
Wow. Okay.
And then we take over at 4 p.m. with a sketch duel, and then Michael Golden has a big workshop. And then we have this amazing writers panel with Al Ewing, Ethan Sachs, who's doing a lot of work at Marvel right now, Mark Russell, and one more person whose name escapes me. I'll have to look it up.
And that's on Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're there Saturday, would you be able to see those
Jed McKay.
Okay.
Three? Jed McKay, Black Cat writer.
Awesome. Are those running concurrently, those panels, or are they going to be able? Will you be able to see the Michael Golden as well as the writers?
There's no overlapping comics programming. It's basically cool. One item per hour during the hours that we have the room.
Okay. So that's for Saturday. Those are the three big ones for Saturday. Do you know who's in the sketch duel?
No. I don't.
That changes all the time anyway. Sometimes that changes on the fly.
Yeah, so if you give me a second while we're talking, I'll take a look and see.
Okay.
We have about four or five sketch duels planned, because we know they're fan favorites.
Yeah, people love them. How about on Sunday? Is there any comic programming for Sunday that people can look forward to if they're not going to be there Saturday?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We've got all sorts of, as I said, we've got a ton of programming all weekend long. And I'm looking it up so I can tell you directly what they are. We have, I know on Friday, we've got two or three sketch duels. We have a breaking in panel. We have an amazing, Mark Asquith is hosting an amazing panel with Kyle Baker, Ron Randall, and that's on Friday afternoon. So let's see. Okay, so Friday, we start off with a sketch duel. Dan Parrott, Fernando Ruiz, Jay Fosgate, and Derek Laufman.
Okay.
So a little bit more younger reader focused on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Raid panel, which they still have to tell me the details of what they're doing.
Okay.
But it is focused. The Raid studio members will be talking. Usually it's like creating worlds.
Okay.
Things like that. So at 2 o'clock, we have Spotlight on Kyle Baker, Arvell Jones, and Ron Randall. And then at 3 o'clock, we have, in the kids area, we have a comic book takeover. This is a new idea for the Family Zone. So we're going to print up these large comic book panel pages, and a creator will tell a story with the input from the kids. So the first one on Friday is Megan Hwang, who's a graphic novel artist who just did a book called Gia and the Neon Monster, published by Dark Horse. And I think she's going to do a Star Wars story for the kids. So we also have the Breaking Into Comics panel at 4 o'clock with Ethan Sachs and Tana Ford and a few other people. Let's see, at 5, we have a sketch duel with Janoy Lindsay, Jason Liu, and Shane Haran.
Oh, some nice. Some
of my favorites.
Yeah. I'll be someone I can. That's on Friday?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm definitely going to bring the tomatoes to throw at Shane.
Okay. Yeah, he was excited to be back in on the sketch duel.
That's awesome.
And then that's it for Friday, because we finish up at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
Let's see, on Saturday, as I said, we've got the 4 o'clock sketch duel, and that is David Nakayama versus, let's see, oh no, sorry, 4 o'clock is Spotlight on All-Star Comic Writers. So Jed McKay, Mark Russell, Ethan Sachs, and Al Ewing. And between those four guys, they're all writing some pretty powerhouse titles.
Mm-hmm.
For Marvel and DC. So 5 o'clock, we have comic storytelling with legendary Michael Golden. And Michael Golden used to be the art director for Marvel. So if there's any guy that could tell you about storytelling, he is the man.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 6 o'clock, we have the Tom Grummett, Ty Templeton, and Leonard Kirk sketch duel.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Anywhere
and they're Ty Templeton, too, yeah. So they'll be ripping each other.
Yeah, Ty Templeton is a trip, any panel he's on.
And then I'm very excited. Tom Grummett's a great artist and a great guy, too. So, I mean, I think fans will be very happy to interact with him. He does amazing sketches, too.
Yeah, no, he's tremendous.
All right. So, Sunday at noon, we start off with a sketch duel. David Nakayama versus Tana Ford. And you might know Tana Ford from the Silk series that came out from Marvel a year or two ago.
Okay.
And she's also been working on some comics for Dark Horse. Let's see. And then Adam Gorham and Michael Walsh are on that one as well.
Yeah. That's a good panel. Great panel.
Oh, yeah. And then at 1 o'clock, we have, actually, what have we got next? I think there's some effects panels at 1 and 2. Okay, so 2 o'clock, we have a sketch duel. Mark Teixeira versus Mike Ruth versus Rags Morales.
Ooh. That's a heavyweight bout. Crazy. Yeah, it's a heavyweight bout.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know if you've ever met. I mean, you'll get a chance to meet Mark and Rags, but those guys are characters.
Yeah, I've actually gotten a chance to interview Rags at the Hamilton Comic Con when I went with Martin. So, yeah, he's definitely a cool guy to talk to. I've never met Mark Teixeira, though. So, and everyone Mark loves
very
Mike Ruth.
Brutally honest. He's a very interesting guy.
Yeah, okay.
I believe that's it, because of other things going on with there's some effects workshops that are going on.
Okay.
In the other room, so.
Well, you know, the thing I like about the March Comic-Con is that it's not so overwhelming that you can't enjoy a little bit of everything. Where I love the Fan Expo in the summer. It's you know, the granddaddy of what we have in Canada. But you do sometimes feel like, oh no, this is happening and that's happening at the same time. I'm going to miss one, or I'm going to miss this lineup to meet somebody. So this is one of those shows where I really feel you get to exhale a little bit and really soak everything in, which is nice.
I love it's a chance to sort of to walk around. You connect with all the people you know.
Yeah.
There's lots of time to go around and look at the booths and look for shopping. So, I mean, obviously I'll be on my hunt for Hot Toys when I have a free time, a free moment.
Are you going to have a vendor set up for any of your stuff this year, or are you
done with that? So I have opted. I did actually have a booth for my stuff, but I opted to surrender the space over to my friend at All New Comics. Just because it's been, we were talking about schedules and all sorts of stuff going on. The fact is we have so many shows this spring that are so close together that I just didn't have the time to go to my storage unit and organize product.
Mm-hmm.
So I will have statues at the All New Comics booth.
Okay.
So I'll be dropping off some of the larger pieces that I have, some like Artifacts Plus figures and some statues, some Bowen statues, and I have a Prince Valiant statue and a few things that I just would like to make some space at home and at the storage unit. So those are easier just to put in the car and put out with a single price as opposed to trying to price boxes of books and action figures and things like that.
Right. That's good. The All New Comics booth, is that who runs that one again?
That's my friend Peter Fisico who runs that company.
That's right. Okay, I always go to his table and get a high priced item that I wouldn't normally buy at a comic shop or somewhere else, because he always has a pretty good deal. So everyone check out that
booth. He'll have lots of deals on hardcovers and trades.
Yeah, he always has great selection there too. Even like he always has stuff that you don't think you would find for as good of a price. So I highly recommend people to go to that booth. Well, actually, don't, because I want to go there. Don't take my stuff.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it's a full show. I mean, we've got lots of vendors coming. Artist Alley sold out.
That's good.
So, you know, please do come out and support us and wash your hands and take the risk and come on down. And
take the risk. Just do it. And the worst case scenario, what? We'll get sick and we'll stay home for 2 weeks and read all the books that we bought, right?
Well, I'm just kidding. That's the best worst case scenario.
That's the best worst case scenario. I'm just kidding, everybody. Don't listen to me. Be safe. Take care of yourselves. So on a more of a fun topic now, what are some of the things you're enjoying reading? Getting back to your personal fandom, what are you looking forward to reading weekly?
That's tough. Obviously, I'm getting a lot of books every week, but I don't have a lot of time to read them, and I feel bad because I load up my iPad every week, and I'm not a purist. I'll read it. I like to read on the run, so I load up my iPad with my books.
Okay.
And Marvel is great for that. DC, I have to read the paper copies, so I just have to read them at home. But I feel bad because I load up my books every week, and I have currently 662 unread comics on my iPad.
I think you're in the same boat as all comic book fans, Kevin. Yeah. Oh man, I buy more books than I can read, because I think part of it is, one, we want to keep up with everything, and then the other thing too is there's always this threat that things will not be available when you're ready to buy it. So you just get it while you can. And then it kind of you want to get around to reading. You know you're going to read it because you like the creator or the character, but you almost buy stuff with the fear of it no longer being there for you. Like I'm thinking of, you know, some of the Epic collections. Those things are becoming like forced collectibles in a way, because there's always this threat that they disappear and then they're on the market for $100.
That is true. Yeah, a lot of stuff is because of the way the market works now, obviously. There's a lot of product coming out, so you've got to pretty much order it and get it when you can, because it'll be out of print before you know it, and there may not be plans to do a second printing.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Shang-Chi Master Kung Fu Epic Collections, because they said that the Omnis, they're not reprinting them for licensing purposes, so those are, yeah, like, even the Conans, right? Get it while you can, because you don't know how long it's going to be here for, so there's that fear of missing out all the time that us collectors, and are, you're a completist, I would imagine. You want to have all of your particular set of something on your shelf to make it look proper.
It drives me crazy. I'm missing one Incredible Hulk Masterworks out of all the Masterworks. That's the only one I don't have. And I don't know why I don't have it. It's like volume 7.
Right.
And it's out of print. And if I want to get it, it's like $800 on Amazon. Ugh. And I'm not going to spend that money on it.
No. It's like the Amazing Spider-Man Ultimate Collection from Straczynski. Volume 5 just disappeared. You can't find it anywhere. It's probably the worst volume of the bunch, but it becomes that whale that you want just to complete it, because it's stupid not to have it at this point. But I think nobody bought it because it was the least desirable one of the five. It's so weird. The lengths we'll go to after to find. Is that still part of the fun for you, the hunt of it, being able to find that book?
No.
You're done with that.
I don't... You know what? I don't hunt for books anymore.
No.
Because I pre-order everything. I just... Obviously, I'm always looking for who's a hot creator and who's something... Like, if people are talking about a book, I'm obviously interested, and I'll seek out the latest issue of something to see what it is that people are excited about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I hear about a new writer or an artist that I've never read their work, I will go out and seek it. Right. Seek it out, so I have some perspective on it. But, like, I mean, this week was a crazy week because so much stuff came in for me.
Right.
And then I bought some additional stuff. Like, I got the History of the Marvel Universe Treasury Edition.
Oh, that looks so good.
And I bought, actually, I managed to get, Peter had a copy of the Hulk Omnibus by Peter David, Volume 1, which I didn't order.
Oh, nice.
There's a Wolverine Epic Collection that I picked up this week, Inner Fury.
Okay.
A collection of Mr. Miracle comics from the 70s.
The one from Steve Gerber and Steve Englehart?
Yeah.
I was thinking about that.
I you know, it's got some great, I mean, I love Marshall Rogers. To me, it should be Mr. Miracle by Marshall Rogers and Michael Golden.
Yeah.
Those should be the names on the top, but even though I love Englehart too and Gerber. But Rogers' art on that was fantastic. And then the last two issues are Michael Golden back during some of his best years. So something that I'll get him to sign over the weekend too. And then a collection of DC's Wanted series, which was an interesting, like a short, I used to have all the issues, but Wanted was like a reprint title, and they'd reprint like the best of Silver Age books with Golden Age stories.
Okay.
So it was like the first place that I was exposed to characters like Wildcat and Hourman and characters like that.
Okay.
That aren't, you know, you might see them in a Justice League crossover or something like that. But to actually see the Golden Age artwork and stories was a real revelation. Like, I love some of the Bob Haney stuff and I'm trying to think who else worked on it, but there's a... The Wildcat story in there is fantastic.
That's cool.
One of my favorites. So there's that. And then there was a Batman black and white statue that came in this week by Doug Mankey, which I love Doug Mankey's artwork. So I was really excited to get that. So that's like my haul. And then I got like 16 Marvel books.
Single issue.
Yeah, like what came in this week? X-Men, Venom, Thor, Symbiote, Spider-Man, Marvel Snapshot, Submariner, Kylo Ren, Darth Vader, Star Wars Bounty Hunters, Immortal Hulk, which is one of my favorites. That's a must-read as soon as that comes in. Hawkeye, Free Fall, Gwen Stacy, Ghost Rider, Avengers, Amazing Spider-Man. Those are all on my list this week. So,
how do you manage the space? That's something that I always struggle with, because I collect a lot. I buy a little bit of every company. I've got, you know, Valiant Stash and Image Stash, and then of course one full bookcase of DC, one full bookcase of Marvel. But I don't want to become so overwhelmed where my wife just goes crazy, because she's pretty cool about me collecting. So how do you manage the space with you still have a Diamond account, right? So you can pre-order everything?
No, I don't have a Diamond account anymore. I gave that up.
Okay.
So I but I work with All New Comics, so they'll, I can order whatever I need.
Right.
No, I have, it's out of control here at my place. It's like a library. Right. It's like bookshelves everywhere full of stuff.
Yeah.
In nearly every room.
See, that doesn't bother me. That's like a dream for me. I'd love to just have a house full of bookshelves and just, I love sitting in my book room and just, you know, seeing what I have and organizing it, reorganizing it. But, you know, you can't, it can't, you gotta.
Well, I stopped with single issues years ago. So while I do get new comics every week, I just put them on my iPad and then I tend to sell the single issues.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I don't keep those because they're just space that, like, I have no, and all of the collectors are probably going, no, Kevin, you got to keep it and bag them board. And all. I just generally get rid of them after I load them up on my iPad.
Do you ever think of just getting, like, the digital straight from Comixology, or you do it to support your store?
Well, it's just I do it to support my store.
Yeah, that's what really matters at the end of the day.
And I get a deal, so it's it all works out.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because as just it's a part of my arrangement when I closed my business down and worked it over, is that I still assist with delivery and stuff like that, so I get a good deal on my comics.
So, do you purge anything else? I find myself oftentimes looking at my shelf thinking, okay, I'm not probably going to read that again, but that Daredevil from Frank Miller, definitely keeping. Do you ever go through that where you got to purge?
You know what? I was getting ready to purge for the convention, and I actually had loaded up a few boxes of books I didn't think I'd ever want to read again.
Okay. What was in the box?
There's a whole bunch of difference. Sometimes there's a new collection coming out. Like I have, like since I got this Peter David hardcover, I have some Hulk Visionaries trades I'm going to get rid of.
Right.
And then there, like the Peter, like I got the Peter Cannon Thunderbolt series that came out. I think it was written by Kieran Gillen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very well received and well, so, and I enjoyed reading it, but I was like, I'm never going to reread this again.
Mm.
So I might as well put that in the for sale box. You know, there are some things that maybe I had at the store and then I wasn't sure I had in my collection. So I have two copies.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I as I said, with the book stuff, it's always a case of I'm running out of room. Maybe I should get rid of some stuff. And what can I purge? What doesn't have to be part of the permanent collection?
Right. What's your preferred format of reading? Like you said, you're not a purist, but you did switch over from the Visionaries to the Omnibus. If something comes out in Omnibus, would you rather have it in that format?
I would, yeah. Okay. I would rather have it in a nice Omnibus. It depends on the material. Or a deluxe hardcover, like DC does those nice deluxe hardcovers.
Yeah, those are really nice. I like those too.
Which are slightly oversized. I like those ones. But yeah, and again, it depends on the material and what it is. If it's classic stuff, I'd rather have an Omnibus.
Do you find yourself going back to read it in Omnibus? I always want the Omnibus, but then I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to pull that out of the shelf and read it like that. It's such a stupid thing to do.
No, I will. I have a desk that's pretty good for reading Omnibuses at. So
okay,
it's not like something I take to bed to read.
Right.
That type of thing, because I probably destroy it if I fall asleep.
Yeah.
But I also collect all the Epic collections.
Do you collect the full, like every single one? Doesn't matter what it is?
Yeah, pretty much everything except for Star Wars.
Yeah, that's out of control.
And Dark Horse Conan.
Oh, really?
I collect those Epic collections now.
Is it just because you're not a big Conan fan, or do you have them in another format?
The ones I have in another format. I just don't want everything because not all of it was really that great.
Okay, got you.
But I do. I think I'm going to do the Marvel run of Conan in Epic Collection.
Okay, from the original, the Roy Thomas stuff.
Yeah, I didn't get the omnibuses of that material, so I figure I'll just stick to the Epic Collections.
Yeah, I started my first reading of Conan is actually that Dark Horse material from Kurt Busiek, because I'm a big Busiek fan and Kerry Nord fan.
Oh, yeah.
But that was my first time ever reading Conan, so it's funny. You're avoiding some of that stuff, but that's where I started from.
I have the first three or four of those in hardcover still.
Yeah, which is nice.
So I'm like, you know what, I don't want to rebuy that material.
Right. If you've got a format you like, keep it that way,
for sure. And there are a few Conan trades from that era that are like Conan, the Jewels of Gwalior.
Okay.
Which is a P. Craig Russell story. And I think there is a Mark Teixeira one. The Daughters of Midas or something, I think it's called.
Okay.
And that was pretty good. So I have a few Conan, individual Conan books like that. But once you get into like Conan like 50 and stuff like that, I was long gone by then.
Yeah, I think it restarts after 50, and I think Truman takes over and they renumber it, yeah. The third Epic Collection, I think, starts that next run, which I haven't gotten into yet. What are your thoughts on the current state of DC Comics? I know that when they come to Toronto, you get a good lineup of their staff. So you must have a pretty, I don't know what your relationship is like with all of those guys, but what are your thoughts on the current state of DC Comics? How did you know Dan DiDio well?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as well as I know anybody in the industry.
Right.
He was always very friendly and personable when we came to our shows.
He was great at those panels.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he was really, really great at the panels that he hosted. I remember sitting in on one, and he started just walking through the crowd talking to people, and I didn't realize it was him. Like, oh, shoot, that's Dan DiDio just talking to the fans. Like, it was all of the things sometimes you hear people criticize him for, the creators and my personal interaction with him was always really, really pleasant. So I like the guy.
He was very personable, very friendly person, and he loved coming here. He saw Toronto as a great market with lots of different voices.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked that we were – he said to me one time, he said Toronto was like – on the verge, like all the other shows are very North American focused, but he found that Fan Expo Canada in particular, the audience was so global. So he got a sense of what was interesting fans from Japan and the Asian markets and Toronto from the people that he interacted with, as well as the European market,
so you know,
and French Canadians, and just like a greater sense of where DC fell in the world. And how they were treated and, you know, the response in Canada.
Yeah, I think Toronto is a very interesting city like that in general. Just even how we are with sports, how we are with entertainment. We have a little bit more of a different gauge to things than you would see maybe in other parts of the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised at him, at his leaving or being dismissed? I'm not even sure what the story is.
I am not too certain what's going on, what happened there. I know Jim Lee is now sole publisher as opposed to the co-publisher status. I don't know. Like, I mean, I hope Dan's okay. I mean, it sounds like I know people who are friends with him, closer friends with him, and he seems to be okay with what happened. So, like, I mean, obviously I think he'd rather still be there, but he's okay as in he's not hurting. It's the reality of any business is that, you know, sometimes you have reached the limit of what you can do.
Yeah.
And maybe someone upstairs doesn't see the value that you bring to the table. It's like, I'll be honest, I have another job and I'm sort of in the same boat there where, that position is ending in the spring and I, you know. It happens. Sometimes things don't always work out.
Right.
But Dan did have an amazing run at DC Comics.
Yeah.
Decades of change. I mean, we've been living in a Dan DiDio DC Comics world for 20 years. From all the different crossovers, the Infinite Crisis and before Watchmen's and everything that he's done. Doomsday, right up to Doomsday Clock and Metal and the Dark Universe stuff.
What did you think overall of that? I would say it's about 20 strong years of him being a presence at DC. Mm-hmm. What did you think overall of the legacy that he leaves behind for the company?
Obviously, I think DC has had its ups and downs over the last 20 years. I think that New 52 was a huge splash, and Rebirth, you know, brought a lot of people back into the fold. I think he's been the caretaker of DC during some interesting years, and there have been a lot of great books that have come out under his stewardship.
Yeah, I think so.
But I wasn't always a huge fan of some of the decisions. Mm-hmm. And I was a big fan of DC from about 1998 through to about 2010, just before they did the New 52. Because I liked where they were going with the generational aspect of things.
Yeah, yes.
So that kind of bothers me that this summer their focus was on generational stuff and bringing all of that back. And I kind of wish that had never disappeared. So, because I New 52, I was one of those people that was kind of repulsed by New 52. I didn't care about any of it.
Yeah.
And, but I know it brought a lot of people back, and I have a lot of friends that came back and started reading DC during that time period. I think I kept with Batman and Green Lantern for a little while because they were the least affected.
Right. Their stories continued. Yeah. Yeah.
But once those big changes started creeping into those titles, then it was like, I don't think I care anymore.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the difference that I've noticed in my reading a lot more of Marvel's history and all of the stuff that they have. Even when things change with a character or with you know, their universe, there's some sort of a reboot in a way.
Mm-hmm.
What happened originally to those characters still have – it's still there. That legacy, that essence of those things is still there, as opposed to it being like which version of this is this now? Is this post-crisis? Is this pre this crisis, rebirth? So it kind of makes, for me, the shelf life of some of those important moments not matter as much, where I feel with Marvel,
yeah,
those epic collections, those stories, as silly as sometimes they can be, they still have some sort of weight to them. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I look at Marvel and it's one continuous history. I mean, the Ultimates a lot aside,
right?
You know, you pretty much every major event, it's the same Spider-Man. He went through all of those things,
right?
The same Iron Man, the same Captain America. You know, there may, and in some cases there may have been stand-ins or replacements or something like that, but you pull a thread and it's all connected. Well, DC, I'm like, well, which Batman is this, and how does it, like, you pick up a Batman title, and I'm like, well, does this guy, is this the same Batman that was in Identity Crisis?
Right.
Or does he remember that? Or, you know, and then, of course, the fact that other external factors were kind of messing with the timeline, too.
Right.
So
it always feels like it needs to be corrected. It always felt like something needs to be corrected in DC Universe.
Yeah. And I feel like now they've got another new version of their history. And now Wonder Woman, instead of debuting like the Perez era one, where she debuted in the 80s or the 90s, 80s, I guess, you know, she debuted in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she's again the first hero again. Okay, that's cool. That's more in line with your movie history. And again, that's part of – so Marvel, when you've got a movie coming out, and they'll adapt the character to look like the movie character, but they'll maintain the history.
Right.
Right? While DC, the character will be how it is in the comics, and then the movie comes out, and then they play catch-up after the fact. to say, oh, shoot, that was popular. Maybe we should make Wonder Woman more like the movie. And then they completely change their history.
Right.
To say, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, Wonder Woman did show up in World War One. She didn't show up in the 80s or in the 50s or the 40s or whatever the case. Now her history is more aligned with the movie history so that she's more palatable for a movie audience that cares about Wonder Woman.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing you point out there, because when the Avengers movies were coming out, the book that Jonathan Hickman was making seemed like it was like the team of the Avengers in his book was the movie team. But it still felt like two different entities in a way, where it still recognizes the history of the Avengers as opposed to the movie also was doing that, but in a modern world.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit more synergy there. Yeah, it's true. DC always seems to be correcting something.
I kind of like that the MCU, whoever is behind the MCU, really loves Jonathan Hickman's stuff.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Because a lot of stuff that we've seen in the movies over the last decade has sort of spun out of stuff that he's done.
Right.
You know, and if we ever see Secret Wars in the movies,
ooh,
it's going to be like the Secret Wars that Hickman did.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the Jim Shooter era Secret Wars.
They might have a couple moments where, you know, a little Easter egg or a cover come to life. But, yeah, you're right. The storytelling that is woven in Jonathan Hickman's, you know, universe that he makes are pretty incredible. What did you think of his relaunch of the X-Men? I thought it was great.
I did enjoy it. I'm not so much of a fan of the series after the fact.
Okay.
But I thought, what was it, House of X and Planet of X? I can't remember what the other one was.
Power of 10.
Right.
Yeah. Both X's in them, yeah.
I thought it was really light years ahead of everything else that had been done with X-Men in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was too radical a change.
Okay.
So it was maybe a little bit too much when you can revive any mutant who's died. And you have like, there's one scene in the book where I actually was completely repulsed. Hmm. I thought, this is not right. This is not a good scene. So Storm is in front of all the mutants and she's chanting stuff that to me seemed almost fascistic. Like she would say something and the mutants would go, oh, yeah, you know, like, and then all of the X-Men are revived and they're revived. They just come to life from pods and they're naked.
Right.
And so they just stand there naked in front of thousands of people. I'm like, what did they, were they reborn without inhibitions and without their own personalities? Would Wolverine want to stand in front of 1,000 people with his dong hanging out? I don't, to me, that seemed, it just didn't seem right. It didn't seem in character.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like he wanted to make a big, bold statement and shock people. And I don't know. To me now, there's no danger. There's no whatever. You know, okay, you know what? X-Men, they've killed so many people, brought them back, all that stuff. Let's just make it so that they can bring them back whenever we want. So now what? What's the risk?
Right.
It's like everybody has Wolverine's healing factor.
Got you. I see what you mean. I think it was a way maybe for him to explain away why that always seems to it, the convenience of it, right? There's always that convenience. Oh yeah, Wolverine's dead. Here he comes again. Or Jean Grey died. Here she comes again. There's always been mutant death. So I guess it was his way of trying to correct the mess that had been made. What I did like about it, because I'm an X-Men fan, but I'm not as deeply entrenched in all of the X-Men history. And it got me interested in reading large swaths of X-Men that I had completely missed out on. So I went back and did like a deep dive into X-Men history, which I enjoyed. And it was interesting to me how, instead of a movie or a TV show doing it, this book, this comic book, revived X-Men lore, where all these books are being reprinted again and are in a way on people's minds. Like even something as 90s as the Phalanx Covenant or you know, Operation Zero Tolerance is back out for people to collect. And I don't know if that – it probably would have happened, but I think there's a certain synergy with the Hickman thing happening that puts X-Men back on the top.
And it makes me glad that people are out there reading again, that they're interested in X-Men and that material, because Marvel really did a good job of effectively killing that interest in X-Men for a long time when
right.
they were Fox properties and they didn't want to help Fox make money. So they were just trying dwindled. To push the Eternals as an was it the Eternals?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
The Inhumans as an alternative.
Yeah.
So it was Inhumans everywhere, and people were turning into Inhumans instead of mutants. And that was, I think, a big tactical mistake. But
it didn't stick. I mean, you had some good things come out of it, like Ms. Marvel, but
yeah,
it didn't. Yeah, the Inhumans are, I think, much more interesting in that 12-issue maxi series type of run that a Tom King would put together as opposed to an ongoing thing. Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. For me, the Inhumans were always about the royal family.
Right.
Right, and not the rank and file Inhumans, but this, you know, by dropping a gene bomb and creating Inhumans all over the world, it was a good plot for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I guess, so.
Right.
And they needed something, but.
Are there any movies you're looking forward to most this year?
Obviously I'm looking forward to Black Widow.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about Eternals. I'm hoping that's pretty good. I think the focus on that is on the Black Knight, which is good.
Is that coming out in 2020?
Yeah, it's coming out in November or December.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Somewhere around Christmas time. Obviously, I'm interested in James Bond, and now it's been delayed till November, but that's crazy. It just means a longer wait.
Did you have any interest in Bloodshot?
Is it bad if I say no?
No, of course it's not bad. Not at all.
No, I'll see it. I'm not going to run out and see it. I'm not a huge Vin Diesel fan, so.
Me neither. I'm a big Valiant fan, but I'm not a big Vin Diesel fan.
And I like Valiant, but I'm not a big fan of Bloodshot either, so.
Yeah. He wouldn't be a character that I'm normally drawn to, but I did start reading it because I like Jeff Lemire a lot. And those stories were actually really, really good. So, yeah. So I hope it does well for the company for their sake. But, yeah, I'm on the same page as you. I'm not a huge Vin Diesel fan. I'll watch it, but I don't know how quickly I'll rush out to see it.
For me, like the best Valiant characters would be, like, Exo Manowar yes. or Shadow Man.
Okay.
Like, original Shadow Man. The Jack Boniface character. And stuff, but I was more of an OG Valiant fan. So back during the first run with the Jim Shooter and Bob Layton and Barry Windsor Smith and all that. So
the new stuff has really maintained a good quality and what's nice about it is that it gives the legacy of Valiant as a company from the stuff that they did in the 90s. It gives it that lasting power, because that stuff is really good, that original stuff that came out. So to have the legacy of the company and these IPs continue to live on, it's nice to see something else outside of the big two have a really interesting universe that you can read about.
And I'm hoping that Bloodshot does well enough that they'll look at other properties.
Yeah.
Like I really would, hope that, I don't know if there are any Easter eggs in Bloodshot hinting at other characters, but I'd love to see a character like Toyo Harada.
Right? Yeah.
Show up, yeah.
Harbingers would be such an interesting movie.
Yeah. I think that would be a way to build an X-Men type brand without the X-Men.
Yeah, because Harbinger, they were kind of like the X-Men and the Runaways in a way before the Runaways, right?
They were the original Runaways.
Yeah. So that would be really cool. Well, I'll let you go, Kevin. It's been great chatting with you. I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. I hope everything goes according to plan and things stay contained where we can enjoy a weekend festivities of celebrating comics. And thank you for all your hard work and putting it together every year. I've enjoyed every show that I've been to that you've organized since you've taken over.
Thank you. That's great. Yeah, I appreciate that. I do think I have like a good feeling about next week. I think we're going to be all right. I think if we all just sort of take into account all those precautions that they're advising us to take, washing your hands, looking after yourself, I think we're going to go into Wellington and have a fun weekend.
Yeah, I think so too. I hope so. And I hope everyone that goes out takes those precautions and has a great time.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Cool.
Well, you have yourself a great night, and we will do this again soon. And hopefully all of this madness will have stopped, and we'll be talking about what's coming up at the Fan Expo show.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of exciting things planned. Let's hope they don't go to the wayside, and I don't think they will. I think we're going to have a good we'll have an okay summer. I think everything's going to work out.
Yeah, I hope so. 2020 has been a rough start. We need a good summer.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome.
Thank you, Eric. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.